The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
We're open to anything, moving up, moving down. We're open for business in the first round and in every round. We have some holes we feel like we need to fill in the draft, and we're a draft and develop team. The more picks we have, the better. But if there's an opportunity to move up and strike, if the board kind of recommends it, then we won't be afraid to pull the trigger on that either.
That would be Elliot Wolf, and he solves problems. The Patriots have a quarterback problem, as we all know. By the way,
good reference.
I'm so happy. I'm very happy to be here. It's like it's draft week, dude. I woke up just with a song in my heart. I just feel this is my favorite week of the year. Oh my God, I'm so happy. It's finally. I don't know. It's just me. I feel like it took longer to get to this point. Maybe it's because life been life in 24, but I'm like, when is the draft going to get here? And it's finally here. It's finally the most wonderful week.
See what you're
of
feeling.
The year.
See what you're feeling. I'm going to feel on Thursday. Somebody say Thursday.
Okay.
Thursday morning.
Okay.
I will feel it on Thursday morning. But, you know, draft week.
Yeah,
not yet. Because we still have some things like Elliot Wolf is doing there. You know, you still got the game playing.
Less.
You got the
less. I don't think he's playing the game. Okay, wait a second. Hold on. All right, let me set this up. Because there's what you just heard from Elliot Wolf, saying what all general managers say. They all top personnel guys say. They all say the same thing. We're open for business. We're open for anything. Nobody that I can recall has ever publicly come out and said, no, thank you. We chilling. Don't even call us. We're just picking. I don't remember that because you just never know what somebody will do. So I think it was a Mike Reese article where he described the Patriots as needing an unprecedented or blockbuster offer to move off of number three. I don't think it's posturing. I don't think they full of it. I think that's actually the truth. And it's because of the man pictured right there. Not Gerard Mayo, but Robert Kraft. Robert Kraft has already said, I like a quarterback. I'm not going to tell him what to do, but I like a quarterback. I don't think the Patriots. I think the idea of they need an unprecedented or blockbuster offer to move out is true. I think it's actually honest. And by the way, it's hard to talk about what the Patriots do at three. We don't know what the Commanders are going to do at two. We'll get to them in a moment. But in terms of what the Patriots do at three, I think they take a quarterback rather than live in quarterback purgatory, rather than pass on a quarterback. It's like I already told Vince and Entourage, like, you know what kills your career? Passing. Like, I don't think they want to pass on a quarterback unless somebody knocks their socks off and then they can sell to the paying customers that Robert Kraft is concerned with. Hey, we got an offer we couldn't refuse. So if Drake May goes and kills it in Minnesota or Jaden Daniels goes and kills it with the Raiders, but we couldn't turn this down. Otherwise, I think the Patriots' plan is honestly to stick and pick. And all Elliot Wolf is saying is, hey, if you want to call, call. But it's going to take a lot. We're open to anything, but I'd be surprised if the Patriots moved and didn't take a quarterback.
Well, this is why I think it's a little bit of game playing. Because I think the Patriots' plan, as you put it, the Patriots' plan is fluid. Now, let me just, I just want to put this, let's take this out of football. Let's take this to a village or back old school Greece. Let's take it back to a city state, all right? So for 24 years, you had a ruler. You had a ruler. And for the last four of those 24 years, there was some grumbling about how he needed to go. And that grumbling got louder in year 22, in year 23. And finally, year 24, hey, the wall comes down. The ruler is gone. And now you got a bunch of people standing around saying, okay, so what's your title? What am I going to do? What you going to do? You called Elliot Wolf a GM. He ain't no GM.
No, I corrected myself. Crazy. I corrected myself. I said personnel guys. I realized I said that.
They got everybody. Yes. Everybody's new. Everybody's trying to prove something. That is the worst position to be in. I like some new blood. I like some new energy. Mm-hmm. I hate a situation where everybody's new. Everybody's new. It's so annoying, right? So you've got Robert Kraft. He's not new, but it's the first time in this century, where you can look at his personnel office.
He ain't been outside in a while. Like, he in these streets, he kind of don't know how to act, right? Yeah, I got you.
We're hearing from Jonathan Kraft now, more recently. Jerod Mayo's never done the job. Their offensive coordinator, Alex Van Pelt, has never called plays. Elliot Wolf, are you going where I think you're going? Elliot Wolf's the general manager, but not really, because they got to have a search for a general manager. Look, man. They don't know how to play the game.
Just play it safe and trade out. So just trade out. Just don't risk missing. Just trade out. Just get more picks and just kick the can down the road, basically.
I think there are a lot of people pulling in a lot of different directions. I think some people want take Drake, like me. I would just go there and be like, look, hey, all y'all, sit down. Listen to me. Take Drake. Bye. I'm done. Mic drop. Mm-hmm. But I think some people want to take Drake. Some people want J.J. McCarthy. They got some McCarthy fans in that office. Yeah. And some people are waiting for that. They're looking for Nirvana. They're looking for that, the modern day Herschel Walker deal where, they get, four first rounders and they can still wind up with the quarterback that they like and set up the franchise for the future. I don't know. I don't think they're... They just don't know how to play the game yet. That's what I think. You think they're telling the truth. Okay. I think it's a bunch of people who don't know how to play the game.
Well, there's a lot of gamesmanship going on, a lot of smoke screens. What I love about Monday of draft week is we kind of start to get beyond smoke screens and rumors and innuendo and a silliness and lying season and all that kind of stuff. We start to get closer to the revelation of what these teams actually intend to do. But I think fittingly, given that a lot of people are full of shit this time of year, let's talk about a fart. Let's talk about a fart heard around the league, and let's get to the bottom of what may or may not have come out of Trent Baalke's bottom. In case for some reason you didn't see this.
You know, whether that's three or four players we're looking at right now, we're not there yet. You know, we still got a couple of days going through. Coach and I haven't sat down and gone through the final board yet. We'll do that on Monday.
are we sure that was a fart? Because let me tell you.
He said, excuse me.
Well, it was a noise, and it was polite. See, I'll get to the excuse me part in a second, but I mean, I want to establish, like, are we certain? Well, listen, you're 10 years older than me, so you've been going through this longer. As I approach 45, my body starts to make more noises that it never made before. And sometimes farts don't come out the bottom. Sometimes they go up. Like, you know how many times my stomach will make weird noises that'll sound like a fart? I mean, it could have been something, a burp or a belch.
I mean,
it could have been a stomach growl.
Like
a whine. Are we certain it was a fart?
That's like a creak.
Like, there are no guarantees in this league.
I guarantee.
At this time of year, are we certain it was a fart?
My bet's your money.
Okay.
Push all your chips in on that
okay.
one.
Okay. All right.
That was straight
up. So since we've established that it was a fart, here's my only issue, if I can critique Trent Baalke. See, I can't tell you how many times that I've farted right here on this very show on mic, but you wouldn't know it because to me, I don't think you say anything. I think it's two things you do because I've given this a lot of thoughts and I saw this. It's two things you do. One, you hope that nobody heard it. You just keep it moving. Right. Just ignore it. Don't even say anything. Don't acknowledge it. Just keep going. All right. Number two, Like, if, for me, if I think you may have heard it, or I'm concerned about being embarrassed, which is a bodily function. I mean, everybody does it. Why are we embarrassed anyway? Whole another conversation. I make a corresponding noise to cover it up. So it's like, if I'm going like,
I'll start to shift in my chair
and make a noise with my chair and be like, oh, you know, I'll do something like this. Like, oh, that wasn't a fart. That was me, you know, shifting the chair on the floor. I'll start to move some stuff around. You know, like the whole coughing trick. I'll do something that, like, you know, oh, I sneezed or whatever. Something that just kind of distracts you from what you think you heard. That's my go-to. If I'm in a company where I don't want people to hear it. But typically, at this point, especially in my house, I don't care who hear. I don't care if the kids hear, see it. My wife, I'm not going to put her on blast. Girl, I'm going to stop right there. I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. I was going to say something that I shouldn't. I shouldn't bring you too much into my marriage. Go ahead, Michael. What were you about to say?
But wait a minute. Because there's a third thing. You forgot a third thing. You said two things. There are two things you got to do. One, figure out if anybody heard it. Right?
Well, not even just keep it moving. Assume that they didn't.
Then, and two, if you think that, you know, if they heard it, now you're going to make some kind of corresponding noise. You're going to deflect.
Yeah.
But you keep talking about sound. How about those poor people? I don't think that was on Zoom. How about those poor people who were in the front row? How about smell? How about the smell of it? I may not have heard it. Now, to take you into the Holly household, I may not have heard it, but I smell something. See, my wife is very smell sensitive. So she smells things like 2 minutes or 3 minutes before anybody else does. She smells things like two towns over. So if we're driving and something in the car, she's like, okay, kids, wait a minute. Stop the car. Somebody's going to admit it. Somebody's going to say, excuse me. And it's like this whole interrogation.
I want you to acknowledge it. No, absolutely.
And the kids are like, I didn't do it. No, somebody's going to do it. Stop the car. Somebody admit it. Say excuse me. Right. That's nasty. Roll the window down.
Okay.
The whole thing.
So if Doug Peterson, who was next to him, or the people in the vicinity, if they smelled it, then you say excuse me and you own it. Because what I was going to say, and I ain't saying no names, is nothing pisses me off more than people who won't own their farts like I'm crazy. It's like, oh, so I'm just smelling shit right now. And it's like, it's all under the covers. It wasn't me. There's this hot pocket under the covers. And I know good and damn well it wasn't me. So you just ain't going to say nothing. You just going to act like that didn't happen. That's what drives me crazy more than anything. It's like, just at least acknowledge it. Like, I don't have a problem with it. You know, you don't even need to beg my pardon. It's fine, but don't just act like it didn't happen if I smell it. So if you're saying they smelled it and it really was like, because some farts are less deadly than others. I mean, maybe Doug Peterson is used to it by now. Maybe Doug Peterson spent so much time around Trent Baalke until it actually wasn't a big deal. Maybe because you know what? It's the silent ones that are the killers. Those are the killer, the stinkier ones, right? Whereas the loud ones a lot of times are sound and fury signifying nothing, you know? Right. And so maybe it was a loud one, but it was just like a, you know, more loud than it was deadly. And maybe it wasn't that big of a deal. In that instance, that's when I think you do the noise thing. And I've had a lot of those happen, you know, in
but
my life.
But I'm telling you this.
Like, okay, I know that don't stink. I'm going to just make some noise and see if I could distract from it.
Is it possible for us to put that up and can we, you know, not that I'm not trying to direct the show here. I'm no director here. But I'm just asking, is it possible for us to put that up in a three box? We can just see it and not hear the sound. Can we just see it? Because I want to make the point.
You want to see his reaction?
Yeah. Because this is why he's nasty. This is why I know he's nasty. And this is why I know he does it all the time. If you watch his face, he does not break stride. He broke wind, but he did not break stride. Okay, he's talking. Nothing changes.
Like, didn't break stride.
Sometimes you know it's going to come and you've got to pause a bit. Like, he's still going. Look. Excuse me.
You're right.
Changes.
You're right.
Nothing changes.
You're absolutely right. He was not in any way shaken. That was a lot of poise on display right here by Trey Baalke.
I mean, this is unbelievable.
He was unflappable. He was unflappable in that case.
And he's talking?
Despite his flatulence, he was completely unflappable and kept it moving and kept his train of thought. This is incredible. All right. I know who can get to the bottom of what came out of Trent Baalke's bottom. Who better to sift through the bullshit, okay, when it comes to Trent Baalke's bodily functions and the NFL rumor mill than Charles Robinson. Charles, you've been in a lot of press conferences. You've been in a lot of locker rooms. Where would you rank what Trent Baalke just did? In the pantheon of press conference blunders.
I've been on the show in a minute, and this is probably not a positive sign that this has been like, let's get Charles on for this one. This is why we bring you on. Who come on to talk about this one? Oh, Charles, the important information. When that happened, I didn't see it live, but I had somebody in the league texted it to me, and I watched it. And my response was, like, usually you guys save those for me when I call you to ask you things about the draft. that's usually coming out of the mouths of executives. Everything you hear is basically wind. It's all wind at this point. Like, I don't know if you can really believe any of it. And it all has an odor by the time the draft passes. You're like, oh, that was all bullshit. Like, basically everything you were telling me leading into it was that. That was a... I have never seen that before, but I was like, he just kept it moving. I applaud him for apologizing, keeping it moving, didn't skip a beat. It also felt like an epilogue on the Jaguars season last year too, though. I was like, that's it. Like that, there we go. Now it's past. Yeah, there we go.
A lot of Jaguar seasons in which they shit the bed, which Michael claims nobody says but me. Okay, all right. So look, Charles, let's have some fun. All right, it's our favorite week of the year. Let's have some fun. And we can go team by team, quarterback by quarterback, because we all know that quarterbacks make the draft and the NFL world go round. But I want to give you like a wide just space to play in, because I don't know. Maybe I've asked you a question like this before. I don't know that I have, but it feels new. So let's go with it. What is something that you're hearing that your Yahoo and journalistic standards will not let you write or report, but you're like, you know, it's like, okay, it's right there. And this is, I know there's something to this, and I'll make you a deal. I'll grant you immunity. If it doesn't happen, we ain't gonna hold it against you. If it does happen, you getting all the credit. So you don't need the two sources. You don't need to vet it. It's like, I think this is true. It's just not airtight enough for me to put my name and Yahoo's name and report it. What's that juicy, juicy rumor you're hearing right now that you love?
I will focus this through. So I spent the weekend making a bunch of phone calls, talking to some different people. I'm going to continue that this morning. And a lot of people are looking at the Broncos and going, what are they doing? Like, how come we're not hearing anything about the Broncos right now? Like, everybody's so hyper-focused on the Vikings and the Vikings moving up. And people have just completely cashed the Broncos out of this potential move-up scenario because they lack a second-round pick this year, right? And last year, the template was set. When Houston moved up from 12 to 3 last year, they gave up 12, they gave up 33, and then they gave up their 2024 first-round pick. So basically, you're essentially giving up two first rounds and a fringe first, right, in that 33rd pick in the 2023 draft. So people are looking at Denver, and they're saying, well, they don't have a second this year, and there's just no way that, you know, Denver is going to give up a first this year, a first in 2025, and maybe a first in 2026. So people have just kind of walked away from this idea that Denver could possibly be a move team. So here's the thing. Like, Patrick Surtain, there were calls for him, right, before the trade deadline with the Denver Broncos. And other teams definitely see him as a first-round plus type of trade asset. So the idea is, I think there are a number of teams looking at Denver and saying, like, is Denver this possibility that we're not talking about right now? Remember, last year, no one had any clue, really until about 36 hours before the draft, that Houston could potentially move up from 12 to go get the quarterback or to go get Will Anderson, basically to package their top defensive player, their top offensive player on their board, to package those guys at the top of the draft. So I think right now you have teams that are sorting through, like, who is off our radar that who's in the cut. And I think Denver is the one that they're very, very curious about, because they know Patrick Surtain. And I don't think the organization wants to trade Patrick Surtain. I don't get that sense at all. But if they want to move Patrick Surtain and you want to get up in those top three picks, is the Patriots potentially that 12-3 move team, just like last year? Arizona moved out of 3-12, and then Arizona traded back up. You know, the Patriots could potentially have that option if they were to move back. And would Patrick Surtain, with Christian Gonzalez, not be an attractive option on the table for the New England Patriots and what they want to do defensively? Or another team in potentially those top four picks? So I think I will tell you this. I don't think people inside Denver really believe that's possible, but I also think Sean Payton and George Payton, the general manager, are playing this one extremely close to the vest. And I'm talking about, like, between the two of them. Those two individuals and the owner may be the only people who know what the Broncos are going to do. And other teams in the league, though, are looking at Denver's depth chart, and they do not believe Jarrett Stidham and Ben DiNucci are their quarterbacks this next year. Like, there's just no belief. Sure. Is realistic. So I hate to say this, because I just don't see them trading Surtain. I don't see them trading, you know, future first assets after going through what they did with Russ. But as I always get told around this time of year, particularly when I'm looking at potential trade up candidates for quarterbacks, everybody says, you know, like, the common thing is look in a 2-year window. You might not believe it'll happen this year, but what are their options a year from now? Okay, what about, you know, Carson Beck? You hope Carson Beck at Georgia puts up a big year. Shedeur Sanders, another guy Jalen Milroe. You really hope Jalen Milroe takes a huge step forward for Alabama. So the big hanging question mark over next year's class could also motivate the Broncos to make an unexpected move. And I would have to believe Patrick Surtain would have to be involved in that. I may write this eventually, but the curiosity is what is interesting to me, is that you just have other teams that are asking, like, what are the Broncos doing? Are they just going to sit there and take the best quarterback who's left at 12?
Mike, if you don't mind, I just want to sneak a follow-up in, just since we're on this train, because you mentioned Patrick Surtain. I think one of the other cool things about the draft is, like, the veteran trades. We talk a lot about the picks and moving up and down the board, but the veteran trades that oftentimes take place around the draft. And I want to focus on two receivers in particular and the likelihood that one, both, either of them, whatever, get traded on draft weekend. That'll be T. Higgins, who says he expects to be in Cincinnati, and Brandon Ayuk, who just wants to get paid by the Niners or somebody else. Likelihood that either of those guys, or even both of those guys, get moved this week or this weekend.
We can make Justin Jefferson a part of that conversation too. I mean, that's another.
Why don't? By all means.
Yeah, I mean, all three of those guys, I think you have to wonder, you know, if something could potentially bubble up during, you know, the run up in, you know, the day of Thursday, or maybe once teams are ultimately on the clock. You'd have to have conversations, obviously, prior to this. I mean, right now, particularly with, like, a Justin Jefferson, I mean, all those guys, realistically, you have to be working on an extension at this stage, because you don't trade for those guys without a contract extension in place. I think Jefferson, very unlikely, because I know that the Vikings, ultimately, they value him as a multiple first-round pick wide receiver. It's not like a Tyreek Hill, when you put all the pieces together, you said, okay, the Chiefs got a first-round pick out of him. You know, Jefferson, it's going to take multiple firsts to pry him loose. And then on top of it, you're looking at, like, $30 million plus APY for contract extension. So I think the asset outlay and the money is far too prohibitive. Ayuk, the 49ers do not want to move him. They just don't. And I would say with Ayuk, the one complication is Deebo Samuel has gotten paid there. You know, Bosa, you have a multitude of contracts. Plus, at some point soon, you're going to have to extend Brock. Yeah, so I think Ayuk, I think there is potential there for Ayuk to get moved, just when you look at the contract realities of what's going on in San Francisco and the fact that they've already paid another wide receiver as it is, and they have a quarterback coming due pretty quickly, and it's going to be a very prohibitive quarterback contract with Brock Purdy. T. Higgins, I think ultimately T. Higgins, I think they're going to strike a balance here, and I think they're going to, they want to pay him. They just want to figure out a way to pay him, and they then do? Still be pay Jamar. I do think they want to pay him.
Are you surprised?
I don't think that they want to. I think their problem is they want to make sure that they get it slotted a solid number under Jamar Chase. But the problem is with quarterback deal, with what Chase is ultimately going to make, that's another $30 million APY. They know they're going to have to rob from the remainder of the team. But I think part of the reason why they want to pay is because Burrow wants him ultimately to be there. Mm-hmm. He wants to keep these guys together.
Because what's AJ Brown making in Philadelphia? Because like Philly's paying both receivers and the quarterback.
So right now, AJ's making like 20. I want to say 20.
Put him, add him to the list too. AJ Brown,
24 APY. I don't think AJ's going anywhere. Yeah, I don't think. I mean, he's fine. I think Howie likes him. I mean, it's not. I think there are other issues there. I think offensively, I think are going to get straightened out from a scheme standpoint. That will ultimately flatten that out, but I don't think they see.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because I have a charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Him as a moving piece.
Okay.
Ahead, Charles, I keep saying to Michael Smith, we were talking about the Patriots, how everybody is new and not really sure of a direction, but I'm going to add the Commanders to that too. They got, Adam Peters, who's been around the block. He knows what he's doing, but then you bring in Josh Harris. When football guys and basketball guys start to have a conversation, a football guy and a basketball guy walk into a bar and they both get thrown out because it doesn't work. It just doesn't work in that case. I feel like both of those teams are going to do something weird at the top of the draft. Am I paranoid, or do you think I'm onto something?
Well, I mean, they've already done something weird when you're talking about the Commanders. They brought everybody on that group visit, right? All the top four quarterbacks that are ultimately on their board. They brought in a multitude of other prospects. It was kind of like that group visit day. They went and did like a top golf event because they wanted to see guys really interact with each other, be around each other, just sort of see basically how guys navigated not only that social situation, but also just a different scenario, particularly amongst quarterbacks. You're used to your one-on-one visit, right? Like you come in, it's your visit. It's this very hyper-focused time between you, the owner, the general manager. This was very different than that. And, Jaden Daniels, his camp took exception to that. I don't think they were extremely happy that it was more of a group visit. But it was interesting. I was talking to somebody about this and I was like, I've never seen this happen before. What help me out here? Like, what is the dynamic here? And this is somebody in the league that like knows the Commanders, has some passing experience with Josh Harris, the owner of the Commanders. And he said, look, he's like, when do you think Josh Harris is available? He's like, honestly, he's like, Josh Harris, he's got a busy schedule and he's very involved with the football end of the Washington Commanders right now. And in his mind, he's like, you do the group visit because Josh Harris wants to be involved, right? Like he wants to be involved in what the process is and he wants to get a look at all these and Josh Harris can't be there every single time you're bringing a quarterback in and doing all the one-on-one stuff.
Then stay out of it. Then stay out of it.
Exactly.
Honestly, you shouldn't be that involved in the first place, but now they have to adjust the way they evaluate prospects on your schedule. Bruh, hire talented people and let them do their job.
They're gonna mess this up.
He might not have all the other shit to him, but this is so early Dan Snyder-esque when it comes to stay in your lane. Stay in your lane. Or David Tepper, even. Stay in your lane.
I think, oh man, let's not even get on that. I will tell you, I will tell you that I think they end up taking Jaden Daniels out of LSU. I really do.
Okay.
And, all right. Like, so to me, I'd be like, all right, this was a lot. But the one thing that concerns me is, I know there are people in the building who like J.J. McCarthy, just like as Michael, you said, you know, there are people in New England who like J.J. McCarthy. I know there are people in Washington who like J.J. McCarthy. And, you know, you wonder as
like,
it gets
like
down
him the best of the other quarterbacks, like him over Daniels and May.
I know that there's genuine interest there in him. I would not say he's at the top of their board right now. Okay. Like, I think gotcha. I kind of think their board is settled. I do think Daniels is at the top of it, but I don't think they're putting a bow on it until we get a little later in the week. They're going to have that meeting where they go through everybody's opinion and then they ultimately make the quarterback choice. A thing that's interesting too, though, and this is like the new world we're in. You keep seeing these betting odds where J.J. McCarthy at the number two pick move, and they're improving right now. Like, as in, like, he's the odds of him being selected number two are going up amongst the odds makers.
And don't May and Daniels have the same odds at number two last I saw?
Depends where you look, but it's very similar. One thing to keep in mind, this draft is a little weird, a little different. Remember when Paolo Banchero got taken in the NBA draft, and right before the NBA draft, there was this report, Scoot Henderson is going to be the number one pick. And then all of a sudden, odds changed. It got crazy, right? And then it turned out that Scoot wasn't the first pick in the draft. I wonder if we're going to start to see the NFL infected with this, where it's like, someone out there there's someone planning information. All of a sudden you see odds there are shifting rapidly and like things like, I think like betting odds is a fascinating thing. Now, when I look at this year's number two pick, number three pick, like I wonder, I don't want to say anything like funny is going on, but there are a lot of people out there in the betting industry that have skin in the game to float information or elicit information to them that might help them get an edge on a wage or things like that. That is a weird wrinkle to this draft I would pay attention to, particularly with that number two pick where the odds have changed a multitude of times. Drake May has been number two at times. Jaden Daniels has been number two. James McCarthy's sliding up and down the board constantly. So just an interesting thing to keep an eye on.
Okay. So we cover the Commanders. So, okay, Commanders, let's just go in order or as the order stands right now. Caleb Williams, you have Jaden Daniels right now. Is your expectation that you said a second ago that the Commanders take Jaden Daniels? What do the Patriots do at three then in this scenario?
This is where it gets fun to me because I think the Patriots, it's hard for me to believe they're going to move out. I think it's too costly. I think they would want more than the 12-3 move last year by Houston because I think they know that if they move back to 12 – they might want to then do exactly what the Cardinals did last year, which is move up from 12. So there's a lot of moving parts for a move back, move up scenario. I've also had a team who said, hey, they could be a double move back team as well. It's a pretty deep draft at certain areas. They could address the offensive line. They have a lot of different needs. They're better off stockpiling second round picks right now and moving back twice. Again, as much as I think one team that may come calling at three is potentially the Minnesota Vikings.
You mentioned Denver.
Minnesota Vikings have already acquired the capital to make a move. I think they have the capital to get up to three, right? And they have two first-round picks, which has got to be attractive if you're the Patriots and moving back. Move back in a deep draft. This is a deep draft, particularly at offensive line, wide receiver, the skill positions, quarterback. And the Vikings, Josh McCown being the quarterback's coach, having that relationship with Drake May, I could see Minnesota moving to three. Not to four, to three. To try and get ahead of everybody and go ahead and select Drake May, number three overall, because I think that relationship there and the tools he brings to the table, they feel like he's and by the way, he's like McCarthy, he's young. And I will say this about McCarthy real quick. Part of the conversation, why teams who like McCarthy, they look at him and they go, he just turned 21. We love Jaden Daniels, but also Jaden Daniels is 24. What is J.J. McCarthy going to look like in 3 years with another 40 starts under his belt? Like, what if his ceiling is actually far higher than we realize? He's just not 24 yet, and Jaden Daniels is. And he started damn near 60 games in his career. So I think that's part of what plays into the affection for J.J. McCarthy as well.
You know, okay. Mike Smith says he loves draft week, and I love the draft. But the downside of the draft to talking about is we wind up talking about a bunch of losers more than we talk about winners. Okay, that's the downside of it.
Like, remove your bias. Hey. Remove your bias.
No, I'm just saying. We talk about, you know, the Bears. We talk about the Bears. We're talking about the Commanders.
I'm sorry. I thought that was a shot at J.J. McCarthy. I thought literal losers.
Oh, no, listen. I thought that guy's a winner. 27-1.
No, I know he's literally one, but I know how you feel about that school up north. Mike, I thought that was a shot at the school up north.
Nobody taken in the top five picks is a loser, okay, ever.
That's right. I'm talking about loser teams, not loser guys, loser teams.
I know. Hey, Charles, you're a Spartan. I would say you come in second on this here panel. People who hate Michigan. So that's why when he said a loser, I immediately thought he was going at McCarthy. No, I'm sorry.
But I'll say this. Great franchises, or really good franchises, are usually not discussed here as we lead up to the draft. But, you know, you look at Kansas City with Rashee Rice. I don't know what's going to happen with that situation. Their leading wide receiver. Do they need a receiver? Do you think they'll come up? And then Buffalo, moving on from Stephon Diggs. Do you think Buffalo or Kansas City, both of those teams, really good teams, will come up and get into this wide receiver party?
They may not have to come up. I mean, that's how deep this wide receiver draft is. And, I talked to a couple of different people yesterday, one of which was doing cross checks on quarterbacks for this draft. And I said, what do you think, like five? And he's like, I can almost guarantee five quarterbacks are going in the first. I said, six? He said, six is a real possibility. And he said, if not at the...
I would take the over on 5.5. Yeah,
he's like, six is definitely a real possibility in terms of teams trading up at the end of the first to get in for, let's say it's like a Bo Nix, right? And for the fifth year option. So if that happens, you're talking about offensive linemen sliding. You're talking about a handful of the top defensive players, you know, are going to trickle down the board. You're talking about other wide receivers that are going to slide. And the one guy who I think is really interesting, Ladd McConkey. So out of Georgia, when we did the All Juice team this year, and we talked to, like, I talked to so many different executives, and Ladd McConkey kept coming up in all these conversations. I had guys saying, like, look, when you look at his tape, granted, there's a little bit of an injury concern there, but if Brock Bowers didn't exist at Georgia, Ladd McConkey would have put up huge numbers because all this easy stuff went to Brock Bowers inside the first 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. He's like, McConkey didn't get any of the simple stuff. He got all of the downfield stuff, the stuff that when I watched, I'm going, that's an NFL route. That's an NFL route. That's an NFL skill that I'm seeing on the table. So you had a number of guys who are like, and I think the question, like when we're talking about McConkey, these teams are like wondering if he's going to be there in like the middle of the second. And I'm like, there's so many people who like this guy. I think he's going to make it to the middle of the second. Like, I think there's a very real chance someone just jumps the gun and says, we're going to get him now. Like, we're not going to wait around. We're either going to move up for him. So I think McConkey in either Buffalo or, with the Kansas City Chiefs is a guy that could surprise maybe at the end of the first round. But there's going to be, you know, Adonai Mitchell is a guy who might go a little later than people think, you know, especially in light of some of the recent reports. And that, you know, I think there's some concern there about, like, you know, coachability, like availability in practices, things like that. Xavier Worthy is another guy who, look, I know he ran the 4.21 40. That's great. But, you know, I think a lot of people see him as more at, especially at, you know, 170-ish, one maybe gets to 175-ish in the NFL. It's more straight line speed. It's not like Tank Dell, who comes in the 170s, but is like, you know, he's a route guy. It's not all verticals. But you know, I could see both of those teams actually addressing a wide receiver late, or I could see them being a potentially trade back team for another team that wants to get up and get a quarterback.
So here's the downside or the unpleasant truth, I should say, about the conversations around quarterbacks that we all know is that we're going to look back and be like, that guy wasn't all he was cracked up to be. And it might be more guys that miss than hit, especially in the first round. We just don't know. It's like there's so much conviction going into the process, but it's like truth of the history tells us that what is it, Charles? Like 40% of round one quarterbacks, something along those lines, end up hitting. However you want to define hitting.
Lower
than that.
Probably got to
lower the bar to make it an easier target. So I guess I would say, like, you know, and McCarthy seems to be kind of like the poster child for, you know, teams talking themselves into a quarterback prospect. I know you and I talked offline about your initial skepticism of whether or not, wait, is this the draft process propping this guy up, or is this real? And you found out that, no, it's really real how teams covet and value and appreciate J.J. McCarthy's tools and traits.
Like, they're talking themselves into his projection, right? Like, that's really what they're talking themselves. They're like, this is, I see enough tape, and oh, by the way,
he
turns his back on a defense. Like, that's a big thing that people love. Like, hey, in the NFL, we're going to ask you to play action. You got to turn around. I'm looking at Caleb. I'm looking at Drake. I'm looking at Jane Daniels. I see these guys in shotgun, which is great. But you know what? You got to run some play action to be an effective passer sometimes in the NFL. Can you do that? Constantly turning his head on defenses. And then they're like, what about third and critical? They're like, that's a very important stat in the NFL. They look at quarterbacks. They're like, is all your success on first and second downs? Those are the easy downs. Give me the third downs, third and five, third and six plus. What do you look like? And they're like, on the cutups. We're calling them making big. Yeah. And so like, okay, well, again, this is at 21, and he was at 20 by the time. He's 20 years old when he was doing this. He was weighing 195 pounds probably in Michigan. That was the thought when we went to the combine. It's like, what's J.J. McCarthy going to weigh in at? He shows up the combine at 219. Now, probably had a couple jugs of water. Like, oh, there was some water weight involved in that, I am sure. But again, it reminds teams he's young. He hasn't grown into even his body yet at this point. And we already see things that we like. And oh, by the way, he played for Jim Harbaugh, who Jim's talking him up. But Jim's not always the easiest guy to play for. Like, he's a different kind of coach, particularly quarterbacks. And this is a guy who's like, he's the best quarterback I've ever had. I think he's the best quarterback in the draft. You know, fudging that a little bit, but you can see what teams are talking themselves into. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but that's
right. No. That was great, especially the turning around aspect. It's like those are those subtle things that people may overlook. Yeah, they just look at good yards detail. And touchdowns and completion percentage. It's like, oh, wait a second. Can you do what we're going to ask you to do at this level? But that was great. No interruption at all. It was great. But just to get to the point and get to the question, what are some of the concerns? Because for as much as, you know, Caleb Williams, like, you know, tore it up production-wise, people have found reasons to question him. A lot of them are on the intangibles, level. Drake May, for all his tools and his youth and his potential, like accuracy, decision-making, like you don't really want to have questions about those things. You know, Jaden Daniels, is he too small? Is he too reckless? Like, I don't want you to call anybody or project somebody to be a bust. I know you're not in the business of doing that. But I guess, which quarterbacks come with the most concerns of these elite guys going in?
Let's go to the top four. I'll give you the concerns on the top four real quick. Yeah. We can do this real fast. Caleb Williams. Okay. All the out of structure stuff. Like, he was doing all kinds of crazy stuff like this last year at USC. Now the apologists say, like, hey, it's because USC, he needed to do this to win. Okay. So there's a reason. But when you look at the length of the play, he's not going to have 4 or 5 seconds running around to make plays. Okay. In the NFL, there's going to be a big issue there. You know, he played more in structure earlier in his career. That's great. The talent, I don't think there's any question about the talent. It's just, can you run the offense 90% of the time as it's given and not go off script, not play out of structure, not make decisions that to us are unconventional on a consistent basis, right? And then I think with him, it is the off-the-field stuff. And the thing that most recently was brought to my attention that I think is realistic, he had the pink phone, right, at the basketball game. He holds it up. Somebody from a prominent website makes a comment about the pink phone, and then he engages with it. on social media. And like, you have teams who are like, what the hell are you doing, man? You're the number one pick in the draft. Why are you engaging with someone on social media right now? Your whole life is in front of you. Who cares what they said about your phone? The hell with that. So that's one. Okay. And then, and you know, like, if there's not success, is he going to react in the Chicago market to fan base that can turn negative very quickly? Go look at the negative pockets with Justin Fields. It was pretty horrible in the fan base when he was at his lowest point. Can Caleb weather something like that? Jaden Daniels, there's some worry about, he, you know, is he throwing in the middle of the field a lot? We've talked about that with Jalen Hurts. Like, oh, is this a weakness in Jalen Hurts' game? Well, they're looking at tape of LSU. A lot of stuff not in the middle of the field. Was it just because he's not asked to do that? Or is there some worry about consistency? Now, you can find throws in the middle of the field, no doubt. It's just about, can he consistently throw into the middle of the field? And then it's his frame. People are saying this is like a Lamar Jackson type player. He is not built remotely like Lamar Jackson from a physical standpoint, so he's not going to take that kind of punishment from Lamar, you know, and he's got, you know, he transferred, goes to LSU, has a monster year with two wide receivers in Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr.
That's Michael's issue.
Two super studs playing with you in an offense that's very quarterback friendly, and you put up massive
numbers.
I'm not saying, wait a second, hold on, I'm
not Jaden Daniels' agent. Let me just interject this. I'm not saying he's the same prospect. He's obviously not the same prospect, okay? Not in the same conversation in terms of thank you. Burrow has some pretty good receivers, too, and still has some pretty good receivers. You know what the idea is at the NFL level? Get them good receivers. So he's hopefully still throwing the good receivers when he gets drafted in the NFL.
And that's fair. That's a fair assessment, and there are definitely some similarities between he and Burrow. But what has Burrow been on the NFL level, too? Injury prone. I think we can say that. At this point, he has shown an Achilles right now that's been injury. Number three, let's say Drake May is that number three quarterback. I think it was, when you look at 2022 to the 2023 tape, people are like, he did not get better. He did not. They're like, he made more questionable decisions in 2023. He was far more erratic downfield. The ball placement was an issue at times. Sometimes it was decision-making. The people who apologized for him say, look, the talent around him was not as good. Josh Downs is gone. The offensive line was a problem. Like, there's a multitude of different things around Drake May that were not as good, and that translated into it. Well, someone said to me, a couple weeks ago, he said, I feel like I'm having the Will Levis conversation again. Well, Will Levis will look great in 2021, and then in 2022, he fell
off. Lost his OC, offensive
and it was
line,
OC, hear all these changes around him. And so that, you know, sort of like, it's not quite to that level, because I think Drake May's personality is completely different. Like, he's a, I think people gravitate toward him. I've heard the Philip Rivers comp, which I think is very, very good. I think he's very much like Philip Rivers when you talk to him. He's got that kind of swagger to him. So McCarthy, it's, just lack of streamlining an offense through the guy. Like, he just, like, at what point was it streamlined through him and he had to carry a team, not for a third down play, but for an entire game? And how often did that really have to happen? Functionally, they just never needed him to do that. And, you know, so people are like, we just want to see more. You know, we want, if he goes back another year and they streamline the offense through him with Sharon Moore at Michigan, and he has like a season where he's throwing 300 passes, you know, which even nowadays in college football isn't like a ton, but if he's throwing 300 passes in a season, maybe we get a better look at JJ carrying a team. And it's just so much more projection with JJ that's worked into the cards here than maybe some of these other guys, because the lack of him having to constantly shoulder the load for Michigan. So those are really the four big things.
But as you mentioned, it could be six in the first round. I just want to sneak in, Mike. I don't know where you want to go. I mean,
no, same place.
Should we be talking more about Michael Penix? And for that matter, Bo Nix, but Michael Penix in particular, there seems to be a lot of growing buzz around how people in the league feel about him. What are you hearing about him?
Well, it's medical. You know, I've had a couple of guys tell me that, like, I think he's got, you know, potentially first round talent, you know, like, especially with the long ball. They're like, the short to intermediate stuff, a little messy. He's got a lot of work to do with short to intermediate passing, but he throws a beautiful long ball, and the long ball travels. Like, one AFC, longtime AFC executive was like, the long ball travels. I love guys like that. You can clean up some of the short to intermediate timing stuff in your offense, in your scheme. He's got huge hands. I mean, his hands are like monster. I mean, he's like Shaq hands. I mean, like, it's crazy. And which is a big deal in the NFL. Like, in bad conditions, this guy's going to be able to spin it, right? And you're going to face bad conditions. The medical, though, is the thing that I think for a lot of teams, they're like, we're just taking him out. Like, he's on our sub board. When the risk and the reward meet, really? We'll take him off our sub board. Now, here's the thing, though. He had his pro day, and I think he shocked people. Because his pro day, he ran like a 4.5, 4.6, 40. And guys were like, what the hell? Like, they did not expect that at all. And then he had an explosive vert, and there were all these athletic traits, and guys were like, damn, like, yeah, the chart's rough, like, medically, but he, you know, he's been healthy a couple of years, and man, look at, he just went out and he did all this stuff athletically. No doubt he's gifted as a passer. Again, short to intermediate is the problems. I think you look at the Raiders. I think you look at, maybe not Denver for Penix, but we're still looking at first round teams, right? I think you're looking at the Raiders. I think you're looking at Denver. Obviously the Vikings don't move up. I think you're looking at the Seattle Seahawks, in terms of like, move up possibility. If they don't address it in the top 10, maybe the Giants, you know, is another team that take a stab at things. But yeah, I mean, Penix to me is, he's the more lock fifth quarterback in the, I think he's the more lock fifth.
More than Nix. Okay.
There's a split camp here. Half guys will tell you it's Nix, that's the lock. Half of the guys will tell you it's Penix, that's the lock.
Flip a coin.
All right. So here's what we know is a lock, and you talked about the depth of this receiver class, is the big three. And we can't. It's hard to talk about the quarterbacks and where they're going to land after the top four, that is, or even after the top three, because starting at four with Arizona, even though Jim Harbaugh likes to say it feels like I got the number one pick, like, Arizona doesn't need picks. Lonnie Osborne can trade down if he just wants to get greedy, but, like, he's staring at what some would say the best player in the draft, regardless of position. It's like, where do you see the big three receivers landing when the dust settles, as in Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, and Romo Odunze?
I'd argue Arizona's in the best position in the draft because they're sitting there and they don't need to necessarily move. They can get an absolute, you know, premium talent in Marvin Harrison Jr., who's as complete a prospect as you can ultimately be. Like, even detractors who grumble about him not engaging in the draft process are like, well, whatever. Like, he's going to show up and be a great wide receiver anyway, so let's not worry about that. And so, you know, he can stay, he can trade out, and I think, you know, as he did last year, I think Monty will, he'll go ahead and sit back and go, let's just kind of see how this unfolds. And I'm going to get more on the clock. If I'm going to trade, I'm going to get more on the clock than I would if I do it beforehand, especially after the first three, quarterbacks come off the board. And so, you know, I think there's the element of them being able to take that best player, or I would not rule this out. He's also in position to move back a little bit if someone gets skittish about, you know, someone really falls in love with Joel. You know, I've heard some people say, hey, maybe he's not, you know, the clear cut number one tackle, whatever. But I mean, he's still there to offer the pick to other teams as well, not just quarterback teams, because of, as you said, Harbaugh sitting at five and feeling like he has the first pick in the draft. I'll take an offensive lineman. I'll take a wide receiver. You know, I'll take the best team. Like, he's like open for business in every which way you can be. I think those wide receivers, though, it's such a luxury to have a Malik Nabers, who some people are like, I like him better than Marvin when I watch some of the things he does. I think he looks a little bit like Odell Beckham Jr., you know. And then Romo Odunze, who, I kid you not, I think I have not heard a single team say a bad thing about the guy. Like, they love his athletic profile, you know, the way he ran, every interview that he's done. I think he's just, he's this gravitational locker room guy. So that top three is, those receivers are so freaking premium. And man, it's, if there's anything we're guessing later, as you talked about with the quarterbacks, where there's some guys are going to bust, I'm curious if we're like, wow, look at these quarterbacks that got taken ahead of Neighbors, or got taken ahead of
right.
And we're like, what were people thinking?
Yeah. No, that'll be, it's going to be fun, man. Well, listen, you know what? I'm sorry. There was one more thing. I almost let you go. There is one more thing. You and Charles McDonald just completed your 10th All-Juice team. The 10th All-Juice team.
Thank you.
Which is such an awesome tradition that you guys have, in honor of Terrence Paylor. I guess I'll just ask you, like, take us inside the process of this year's All-Juice team, and also, like, whether or not there's a certain player that you fell in love with through the process of reporting for the All-Juice team. Because I just know how special that process is to you, in honor and the memory of your dear friend.
Yeah, it was. It's funny because I feel like it's getting more and more difficult the longer we do it. This is the fourth year now. We've picked it up after Trez passed. He did the first six. We've done the last four, and Charles McDonald and I did the last two. And I think, like, it's you make all these calls, and there's just so many arguments about different guys. And then the way Trez set it up, where you're not drafting an all-star team, you're taking players from every single round in the draft. And so inevitably, and we have an undrafted free agent. And so inevitably, the undrafted free agent was Jalen Coker out of Holy Cross this year, this wide receiver. And, you know, you got guys who are like, you think he's one of the top three wide receivers in the draft? And you're like, no, he's not. You have to understand how the team is selected. This guy made it really complicated and difficult to choose this team. It's just every year it's interesting how complicated it feels and how much time it takes. And Charles and I do it differently. I call executives. I say, I'm not the wizard here. You tell me who should be on this team. Charles McDonald breaks down a lot of film. So we kind of meld those two. I think one guy that I really liked, especially when I talked to different teams, you know, Quinyon Mitchell, the quarterback out of Toledo. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there's some question about, like, at the combine, he dropped a lot of balls. You know, it's like, okay, he's top end cornerback, maybe the first corner off the board. Can he catch interceptions? But he was definitely one of those guys where it felt like everybody was really, I remember years ago, Baylor safety Jalen Petrie was one where I think I had 12 or 13 calls in a row where someone said, you need to put this guy in the team. Mitchell wasn't quite to that level, but a lot of people really loved Mitchell's game, top to bottom, other than, like, they're like, okay, he's just got to catch balls when they get, you know, hit his hands. One real quick thing about this team that I learned this year that I didn't know. I went back and I look at Trez's first team and when he's at the Kansas City Star, and he just picked 22 guys. Like, he didn't have a quarterback on his first team. He just picked 22 guys who he thought had juice, who he really liked based on his own film evaluation. This shit is crazy. He had 10 guys, and this is 10 years ago. He had 10 guys who were going to in the league this year. Still
really?
In the league.
That's great.
I thought to myself, awesome. I'm like, are these all first round picks that he took? No. There were five first round picks, but there were five guys who were not first round picks who he picked for the team that have had 10-year NFL careers.
That's that is awesome.
How about that?
Crazy.
How about that?
Like, if you're a personnel man today and you tell me, I'm going to give you 22 names, and 10 years from now, I'm going to come back and 10 of them are still going to be in the league, I'd be like, you're pretty good at your job. Like, that's crazy.
I'm about to say, the pros don't have a hit rate like that. Like the Terrence
really
should have been a GM. Like, they can't predict
that's
people.
That's hard to do.
That's hard to do in our business, let alone in the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, I mean, it's definitely an inexact science, Charles, but you, my man, are a sure thing. Appreciate you coming through, dropping knowledge and emptying the notebook. It's going to be a fun week. And even more fun in another couple of weeks when we start hitting these dynasty drafts.
Stay away from Trump Balky, guys, all right?
Yeah, for sure.
Want the same expert advice you get from the pros in the store while shopping online at DiscountTire.com? Meet Treadwell, your personal online tire guide that matches you with the perfect tire for your vehicle. Get your best match in 1 minute or less with Treadwell by Discount Tire.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of body plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all 4.5-inch body plants are on sale through May 5th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, man. Be good.
All right. Take care, guys.
Just wondering, it's been a few years since you'd been in the playoffs. Just how much were you looking forward to this opportunity just because it had been a couple of years?
Yeah, it was the last 2 years not being in the playoffs, it was, it sucked. I was early vacations. Last year, I went to Coachella. Like, I ain't never been able to go to Coachella.
My man said he ain't trying to go back. At least he's been to Coachella. I have never been to Coachella. And I think
and
the
I
ship
might have
sailed. I don't know if at 45 and 55 we can go to Coachella.
I'm not 55. First of all, I'm not 55.
you're 10 years older than me. I don't know. I'm not 45. Yeah, technically, all right. But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe we could go. It's been a while. I mean, you know, we used to do concerts all the time.
Music's for everybody.
You know.
Music's for everybody.
Yeah,
I'm
no,
going.
For sure. I
That's
just
all there
be
is
old
to
dude
it.
At the club. That's all.
I'm going. Hey, look, man, I ain't trying to holler nobody
to
there. I ain't trying
true.
To holler.
Okay, so round one of the NBA playoffs tipped off this weekend. We had 8 games, 8 victories by the home team, most of them not close. And dare I say it, the team that won game one has the advantage. Just go on the limb and say that. So I'll ask you this way. Like I mentioned, you know, we know who won the games. We know all the home teams won game one. But who would you say won the weekend from either a team or an individual player standpoint? Again, we're talking storylines around here. Who won the opening weekend of the NBA playoffs?
Dame. We just heard from him. I think Dame won the weekend. Because we have been
Get him there. Get him there.
Come on. Come on.
I ain't even going to have to say nothing.
Man.
I'm going to just sit this segment out. You about to say
everything
I was about to say. Go ahead. Go ahead, Cook.
Look.
Go
ahead. First of all, the Milwaukee Bucks as a 3 seed, they were discussed like they were a 7 or 8 seed. They had some problems. We know they had some problems coming down the stretch. Doc Rivers trying to get the team together. Giannis out. What are they going to do? Dame hasn't quite fit in. We know Dame's strength is not defense. I think he would say that. He would probably take umbrage with any kind of with us coming for his neck on defense. He'd probably say, "Hey, I do what I got to do," but that's not the number one part of his game. So I think the Milwaukee Bucks coming into this playoff series, I expected not only a competitive game from Indiana. I thought Indiana was going to win. I still think Indiana's going to win the series, but I may need to back off of that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I need to back off of that because maybe I forgot that Dame Lillard is capable of 35-point halves and that when you let him do his thing in the playoffs, he's got a pretty good track record. Now, his track record against stiffer competition, he's been in the Western Conference Finals, I think, once in his career. And when you look at his...
But when is he on the better team?
Oh, I got it. No, I'm not about to say, oh, he ain't nothing. I ain't about to rip him. But right. I'm saying, but when he gets to the Western Conference Finals, those stats go down. But if you look at some of the numbers that he has in the postseason, there's a reason there are some clips out there and some memes out there of Dame Lillard. The man knows what he's doing when he's not at Coachella and he's out on a playoff court, on a playoff stage. So I think Dame Lillard won the weekend because it's just a reminder of who he is. Check my resume. Check my LinkedIn. I'm pretty good at this.
Well, you stole my thunder. I would agree with you that it's Dame. He's the biggest winner from the weekend, even though he hasn't won anything. And that's the theme. Is they won game one at home. They could still lose the series to a Pacers team that gave them and him a lot of trouble in the regular season, for whatever it's worth. They still don't have Giannis. Like, we could be having a different conversation about Dame and the Bucks, you know, this time a week from now, right? So it's keep it in context that it's one game. But there have been a lot of great players that have played for that franchise. He's teammates with one of them right now. Well, two of them if you count Chris Middleton. And nobody scored as many points as he scored in the first half and a half in Bucks history. Bucks franchise record has some weight to it. You know what I mean? Bucks franchise record. Okay, now we're talking. Okay, so for him to have that kind of performance.
Kareem.
And his return to the playoffs.
Marcus right,
his
Johnson.
Return, you know, big dog. I mean, go down the list, right?
Sydney,
Ray Allen.
Like, you know? Ray Allen. A lot of them.
You know, for him to have that kind of performance in his playoff debut, when there's so much pressure on him, despite the built-in excuse, because at this point, the benefit of the doubt that Dame got from a lot of people all those years in Portland expired the moment he decided to follow everybody else and say, okay, I want to move on to a more competitive situation. And the moment he linked up with one of the best players in the world in Giannis, it's like, okay, now you got to show and prove. And I don't think many people would be or will be, because it still could change, will be lining up to give Dame Lillard an excuse that, oh, well, he did not have Giannis. And so Dame has to do what he did last night, even though he, you know, checked out in the second half, but that was fine. His job was done for the night. He has to carry this team offensively, even with Chris Middleton doing his thing, even when Bobby Porter's doing his thing and you know, Brook Lopez, you know, chipping in on both ends. Like, Dame has to be the guy now and even when Giannis comes back, because an early exit, despite the built-in excuse, will not be acceptable for a lot of people when it comes to Dame's reputation and legacy. And so, given the amount of pressure that is on him, even though he's, I'm not saying he's doing it by himself, even though he's missing the guy that he came to team up with, even though a lot of people have questions about his coach in the playoffs, it doesn't matter. Dame got to show up and Dame got to do his thing, and he did his thing last night. So you and I agree, he is the biggest winner. Since we agreed on that, in the interest of variety, I'll throw to my favorite player in the league. I don't think I've said anybody different lately, but I've loved this dude for a couple of years right now. My favorite player in the league.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about cooking his all-time favorite player, and that would be Ant-Man, who came up big in game one against the Suns.
The little back and forth with Kevin Durant there in the third quarter. How fun is that, and what do you make of the atmosphere tonight?
I think everybody here knows that's my favorite player of all time, so that was probably one of the best feelings ever in my whole life, for sure.
It's just basketball, not even play, it's just hoop, you know? You get hot, you make shots, make tough shots, you know, you're going to feel excited about yourself. So it's on me to keep coming back and showing them a tough look, or whoever's defending these guys, to show them a tough look. If they make shots over us, we move back to the next play, you know, and we move on to the next play, you know? So, he got it going. He made some tough ones. You just gotta live with it. You gotta live with it and be better next game.
Sometimes you see the documentaries being produced in real time. And like when we do the Anthony Edwards story, you know, looking back at the career he's had, when he wins MVP, when he wins Defensive Player of the Year, or when he wins a championship or championships, whatever it is he does, like the moments we witnessed this weekend, him chirping with Kevin Durant, are going to be very prominent in the definitive Anthony Edwards, you know, film. And like that was the thing. I just love moments like that, like just moments of arrival. Like I'm here now, not tomorrow, but now. I'm here now, and I'm not. You're not passing the torch to me. I'm taking the torch from you. And him saying like, yo, in 2 or 3 years, I'm gonna be the best player in the league. Who am I to argue? And I know they got a lot of great players, a lot of young players who are still in their prime, a lot of young players who came after Anthony Edwards, like a Wimby, you know, who may have something to say about that. But I don't know that I enjoy many players. And when I'm talking about joy, I'm not just talking about the way he plays or his skills. I'm talking about listening to him in the post game.
Exactly.
I'm talking about just the smile, the whole package. I don't know that I enjoy many players as much as I enjoy the Anthony Edwards experience.
Yeah, and you said it. You said it exactly the way I see it. It's like he's having such a good time. He's so entertaining. He's so charismatic. I wonder how long he can keep this going, because we've seen other guys like this who have been, I'm not talking about skill level, but just pure enjoyment of the game. And then maybe something wears them down. Maybe it's general manager, not making the right decisions. Contract, they ain't saying the right thing on the contract, coach, or just something, media criticism, and they kind of dial it back a little bit. I hope that doesn't happen. But in the meantime, before that happens, or if that happens, I'm living in the moment with Anthony Edwards. I love how much he just enjoys the process, and he's talking trash to a guy that he respects. And I've seen him do this before. Like he's from Georgia.
It was like endearment. It was terms of endearment.
Yeah, he's from Georgia. So is Jaylen Brown of the Celtics. So I'd say obviously they only played twice this year. You know, East Coast, West Coast, different conferences. But every time they play, he's chirping in Jaylen Brown's ear and laughing. So it's not like, and Jaylen did the same thing that Kevin Durant did. Like, okay, I can't really get mad at him. I'm going to prove him. I'm going to come back at him, but I'm not really mad at Anthony Edwards. I'll take the challenge, but it's just something about, and that's a skill in itself, where you can talk trash to somebody and they know what you're doing. They're not backing down, but they're also not straight up angry about what you're saying. So he's a player. I don't know if he'll be one of the best players in the league. I don't know that, but I know I enjoy watching him.
Yeah.
He's been in my movies too.
He's going to be in more movies too. He was in an Adam Sandler movie. He was great. He played himself. He was great. I mean, but just, I love everything about the dude. I do want to give an honorable mention. We talked about winners. And then we both agreed that the biggest
hometown
winner is Dame.
You will give hometown the honorable mention in a loss? The Pelicans?
No, I wasn't going to do that. Although, shout out to the Thunder, who I don't buy that notion that, they're young. They can't go far in the playoffs because they're too young. It's like they don't play like it in clutch moments. Granted, it's a Zionless Pelicans, I know, in one game, but I don't see why the Thunder can't stick around for a while despite their youth and playoff.
Pelicans
and
gave them.
Speaking.
Pelicans gave them. This could be an interesting series, man. I think I'm not.
It might be, but I wouldn't go so far as to say the Pelicans have the advantage. Anyway, let me stop. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Literally never heard anything like that before. I'm usually not one to be just anyway. I want to give an honorable mention though. And this is a guy that you and I have spent a lot of time over the years arguing, debating, cussing each other out, doing special segments from the Super Bowl about. Like, this dude has given people so much content over the years. Yeah. And listen, I'm not, one game, one win does not a reputation change. But as I saw James Harden doing his thing, turning back the clock, picking up the slack for, Kawhi Leonard being out again in game one against the Mavs, I just thought about, like, the phenomenon of, like, man, nobody ever talks about those games with James Harden. Nobody ever, maybe because it's game one and not game six or game seven, but nobody ever talks about the good performances. It's like they never happened. It's like, no, we refuse to have any other information submitted in this case of the people versus James Harden. All evidence, this is it. I don't care what he does. I don't care how well he performs or shoots or distributes or leads. Doesn't matter. James Harden is not clutch. James Harden is a choker. James Harden is not a winner. I want no parts of him on my team. It's like, and again, you don't advance from game one, so I get it. Because he can, wait for it, end up shitting the bed, later in this series or the next round.
Every time you say it. Every time you say it, it's really.
I never say wet the bed. Like, why say wet
it
the bed?
It makes me
like,
cringe.
Children, yeah. But he couldn't do it. I'm just pointing out.
It's too much.
And I am not saying if humanity's on the line and there's one game to win, I ain't saying I want the ball in James Harden's hands either. I'm simply saying, like, we just conveniently, I'm intentionally doing that thing where I act as though I've seen everything that everybody has said and everything that everybody has written, and I'm going to pretend as though nobody's talking about James Harden today. Nobody's talking about James Harden. Everybody says this. Right. No, I'm saying that James Harden, it feels like in the conversation about James Harden, his highs, his hits, his heroics are rarely, if ever, referenced. We hone in on the antics. We hone in on the failures. We hone in on the losses. Just shout him out for a great performance in game one of round one. Because plenty of Hall of Famers.
Right.
Plenty of people give speeches. Plenty of people have documentaries made about game one of round one. I recognize it. I get it. I'm not going too far for once.
Michael, I know exactly what you mean. So I do. Okay, but. Now, you bring up James Harden. We have had debates about James Harden. We've had arguments about James Harden.
Right.
So, a lot of them. All right, okay. We've also had arguments about the guy whose team James Harden beat yesterday. That would be Luka.
Mm.
All right, so we know Clippers, Mavericks, they've met a few times in the first round. As a matter of fact, I think we had an argument about Luka's shot in the bubble. Made this shot in the playoffs against the Clippers.
And when we got COVID in Lowell, Massachusetts. Was that Lowell? Where were we in Massachusetts taking the photos for the show?
They sent us
out to get COVID. In the dirty ass subway somewhere. Was that Lowell? Was it Lowell?
That was. It was Lowell.
The lengths we went to for this show. And we were
we
arguing
later
that when y'all see those pictures. It was. When y'all see those pictures when this show comes on, for the five of y'all that watch, when y'all see those pictures and it's like, you know, we sitting at a coffee shop, that's us contracting COVID in Lowell for the photo shoot. And we were arguing about whether or not that performance that Luka had, what was it? It was game one or game two a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So this would have been 20. Yeah.
He won a game in
what
the
year
bubble.
Would this have been? Would this have been 2021?
2020.
2020, well, 2020, of course, yeah, 2020, yeah, yeah, so, and we were like, and you were like, they ain't getting all hot and bothered over that. Yeah.
And everybody was saying,
anointed Luka at that moment.
Here we go, this is the beginning, this guy, look at Luka, he's a shot maker, he's like clutch and all this. So, look, they played the Clippers before, they've never beaten the Clippers in a playoff
series. Third time in 5 years, yeah.
So, I know we're going to talk about NBA awards and, you know, MVP conversations. And in the MVP conversation, you have Luka.
SGA.
You got SGA and you got Jokic, of course.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't win this series, man, come on now. If they don't win this series. Now, you lose to the Clippers. You lose to the Clippers. It's not just losing in the first round. Hey, Michael Jordan lost in the first round. Did he? Okay. Yeah, like, maybe a couple times. Maybe once. Yeah, once. To the Celtics?
No, that's it, more than right? once.
I think lost
more
once.
Than once.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, if you count the comeback. You know, I mean, if you count the Magic. Didn't he lose? Wasn't that the first round?
Wasn't that the first round?
Came back out of retirement? That wasn't the first round? No, it wasn't?
No, okay. Simmons.
I mean, listen. You ain't got to preach to me about Michael Jordan.
I'm just saying,
I conveniently forget that Michael Jordan lost in the first round. He scored that 63, as far as I'm concerned, in beating the 86 Celtics. As far as I'm concerned, so yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you got to tell me.
But that's just once. That's just once. So you lose three times in the first round Clippers, and we know historically.
I'm not accepting Luka slander. I will not hold on. You will not
hold
say
on.
This. I will not accept Luka slander.
You're not being fair.
No, Luka.
No, you're not being
Luka
fair.
Gets a pass. Luka gets a pass from me. Luka belongs in the MVP conversation.
Luka gives passes. Luka gives passes. Luka does not get a pass. Luka gives great passes.
They ain't lose the game one at home. They ain't lose the game one at home. And maybe a lot of people, maybe plenty of people, hyped up the Mavericks as a dangerous Western Conference team because of the way they finished the season. There were plenty of people talking about what the Mavericks were going to do in the Western Conference. I was probably one of them. But I will not tolerate Luka slander. You will not say the old word when it comes to Luka. His time just ain't come yet. Okay.
I'm just wondering.
And anyway, they got the advantage. They have the advantage. They lost game one. Now they get to make adjustments. You're very premature. You're very premature in proclaiming Luka to be a choke artist, which is really what you're saying.
I may be going in that direction. But in this documentary that will be produced by Inflection Point, this documentary that you keep talking about, how about a documentary?
Hey, hold on, you fellow bald chocolate brethren. Thank you. We need some research y'all from time to time. See, we're getting old, our memory fade.
How many?
Jordan lost in the first round of 85, 86, and 87 to Milwaukee and Boston back-to-back years. Thank you, Gary. See, that's what we need around here. We need accountability out here. Conveniently mythologizing Michael Jordan. You know who hasn't lost in the first round?
Okay.
And we're about to talk about him in a second.
I'll tell you this.
That's going to change. Because the first time for everything, he's going out in the first round this year. Well, no, he has lost in the first round. LeBron has. He lost a couple of years ago in the first round. This will be his second time. LeBron. He lost in the first round a couple of years ago. This will be his second time. But go ahead. Finish your thought.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Throw in some music.
We can watch the game. Or we could keep it simple.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
To Phoenix? No, but I'm saying,
yeah,
okay, let me just adjust this real quick.
All right,
Michael
back to Luka,
Jordan.
Okay.
And knows, yeah, because I'm going to get back, because I'm about to protect Michael Jordan's reputation and his name. Michael
really
Jordan
needs it. Yeah.
They never lose in the first round when his team won more games than they lost. How about that? So those teams, that team that Boston beat probably won like 35 games. They were like 12 games under 500. Stop it. You cannot
I like
be
what you did there.
An
I
MVP
am not,
of the league.
I'm just here for the I'm just
You
okay,
ain't the MVP
the
of the league.
Oh, stop.
You ain't the MVP
yes,
of the
you
league.
Are.
If you can't if you can't
his predecessor
three times.
We've had this
not problem. Three times.
I don't care what happened 2 years ago. This I command. I just bought G.I. Joe the movie on Amazon the other day, and I'm so excited. I've seen Serpentor in like 30 years. This I command. We will absolutely not adjudicate the MVP. I don't even know if I'm using that word in the right context.
That's fine.
Not,
it sounds
it
good.
Is a regular season award,
okay.
And it is certainly not an award that is a lifetime achievement or lack of achievement award. I don't give two shits about Luka and the Mavs shitting the bed in previous playoffs when it comes to what Luka did this year. And for the record, Jokic is my MVP, hands
maybe
down.
Maybe we need to be Luka.
Stop. But don't tell me that Luka is disqualified from MVP consideration this
maybe
year
need to be
because
more thorough.
He may lose in the first round of the playoffs.
Maybe
it's a regular season
need to
award.
Be more
oh my
thorough.
God, we did it with Giannis.
In your investigation,
we did it with Giannis. It's like, oh, if you don't go deep in the
MVP.
Playoffs, you can't be the MVP. Not you. I'm not saying this to you. I respect you. You know I respect you. You know, Vincent, you know I respect you. I'm not saying this to you, but shut the fuck up. I want everybody to gather up all the fucks they can find, every
fuck in
proximity, and shut them up when it comes to talking about a regular season award as it relates to playoff performance. I hate that shit. Stop it.
I know you do.
Stop.
But listen to me.
Luka was brilliant in the regular season.
That's what you need to do. Maybe you need to measure 9 times. And cut once when it comes to the MVP. Maybe we need to be more thorough with who we are selecting as MVP. So, yes, it's a regular season award, but what you want is somebody who's going to take what they've shown you in the regular season and then take that to the postseason and elevate themselves and the people around them. I'm just saying that. But here, in this documentary that Inflection Point is going to produce, and maybe in this retrospective in 20 years, imagine as we all sit there and hear Luka say, you know what? My career would have been a lot different. I know a lot of people have said this in NBA history. My career would have been a lot different if I could have gotten by the Clippers.
I mean, when you put it that way. Okay. Right. James Harden, look, James Harden, of all people, sent you home. James Harden sent you home.
That is a pretty damning thing. You look at all those banners.
Right.
Look at all those banners.
Reggie Miller.
Beat the Clippers,
and
dog.
Reggie Miller and Charles Barkley and Patrick Ewing all were denied by Michael Jordan, and Luka was denied by the Clippers. I mean, yeah, when you put it that way, I mean, yeah, okay, sure. But, like, listen, is it an indictment if they were to lose to the Clippers, who, last I checked,
three times
not only
in 5 years
advantage, but...
Every year is different.
The uniforms may be the same.
But these are different Mavs teams. Every year is different. Different Clippers team.
It's the same guy, though.
It's the same star.
It's the same common denominator for Dallas. The same central figure.
Yeah, Luka.
Sure, same central figure. But you're not going to tell me, based on what he did in the regular season, you cannot tell me that he's not worthy of MVP consideration. I don't think he should.
I think it will be Jokic. Of course, he's worthy of consideration. Do I think he's the best player in the league?
There's no more discussion about MVP. That's for the regular season. Like, it's over. Now we're talking about this a different animal, different beast, different game.
You cannot take
what you see in the playoffs and apply it to the MVP conversation. That case is closed.
I don't
pencils
fear
down
him.
On MVP.
How
you
about
don't
that?
Fear
I don't
him?
Fear him. I don't. Mm. I don't think he's the best player in basketball. If your team is playing, do you think the MVP has to be the best player in basketball?
Or is it the guy who had the best regular season? I don't think they're one and the same all the time. Oftentimes they're not. If he was the best player in basketball, five motherfuckers would have won MVP in NBA history. That's just not how it works.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, but or very. I don't put it this way. I don't think he's one of the three best players in basketball. I need to see.
You don't think he was one of the three best players in basketball this season?
I do not fear a Luka Doncic-led team because I need to see something else. I think he's fun to watch, but I need some fear in my heart. When it's the MVP, when it's that guy, I need to fear him.
He ain't gonna win it anyway.
Yes, I do.
He ain't gonna win it anyway. Luka ain't gonna win it anyway. Jokic is gonna win.
He's not gonna win it.
Deservedly so. He's the best player in the world. Let's pivot to Lakers Nuggets. I think I prematurely said LeBron never lost in the first round, facetiously. He has lost in the first round. He's gonna lose in the first round again. That series seems pretty cut and dry to me. Like, 9 straight losses. We know they swept them in the conference finals last year. They just have nothing for Denver, plain and simple. Like, if this were NBA Jam and it was 2-on-2, I might give the Lakers a chance. And the reason I say I might is because of Jamal Murray.
Right.
That's why I say might. Because Jokic and Murray take a backseat to nobody when it comes to dynamic duos. But if it was just AD and Bron, maybe the Lakers would have a shot. The Nuggets are just too complete. They're too cohesive. They're too good at both ends. It's like the Lakers might hang around for a little while and make it interesting for a while. But, like, I'd be shocked if they got a game, honestly. I'd be shocked if this weren't a general sweep. They'll get a game. I think this will be over quickly. Will they?
They'll get a game this
year. You sure? Because it's not like they got a game last year. It's not like they've beaten them in recent memory. Like, it's like it's been a long time they've beaten them at all, let alone a series. Right. Like, this seems to have sweep written all over it for me.
Ooh, sweep. Denver is just so steady. You said it. They got the best player in basketball. They do. And they have a lot of other things going well for them. Not to mention their youth, their relative youth compared to the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers have, Reeves and D'Angelo Russell, but I mean, like, most guys on the Nuggets are in their prime. Most guys are right there in their prime and playing championship basketball, including, start Jokic and Murray and Gordon and Port. Like, all of these guys have spent some time together. And maybe the Lakers, where the Lakers have advantages, depth, perhaps. I don't know.
They got more people. They got probably more people who play significant roles. I don't know if it's better depth. I don't even know if I give them that. I don't know if it's better. The starting five is not even a question. But I don't even know if I would give the edge to the Lakers when it comes to depth. I think it might be a deeper rotation, but not a better rotation. And I don't even know that for sure. I hear what you're saying, but it's like, I'm not, respectfully, I don't know how relevant it
but
is.
You know
when
what?
That starting five
NBA,
in Denver, talking about looking back real quick, Mike, talking about looking back, it's like they just have the look of a team that's like not going to let it go for a while. They feel inevitable in the Western Conference. I don't think the Celtics are better, even though they had a better regular season record. I don't think in a head-to-head matchup, I wouldn't take the Celtics and they're top six over the Nuggets in that devastating starting five. I think
because
when we look back, the Nuggets might be one of... Right. Well, but just how well they're constructed and how well they complement one another. I think we'll look back and this will be one of those starting fives that like they make posters with and they have, we used to hang on the wall and they're on t-shirts and they're like iconic and they just don't let that thing go for a couple of years. That's what I think they're working on in Denver right now.
Yeah, the problem with the Nuggets is they have a 7-footer who's a center and a point guard. Mm-hmm. He is that. Like, mm-hmm. He doesn't just pass well for a center. He passes well. He passes like a point guard. So imagine, we've seen 6'9 point guards. Thank you, Magic. We haven't seen a 7-foot point guard like this one. And so he's got anticipation. He's got vision. He's got a passer's heart, but he can also take the ball to the rack. He can rebound. So he's the most difficult matchup in the league. The Lakers don't match up with him. No shame in that. Nobody else does either.
Nobody does.
I still think they get a game, though. They get a game.
Okay.
Game
that's
three,
where we are,
LA.
Though. That's where we are. It's like, it's not.
They get a game.
Do the Lakers, can the Lakers beat them? Can they get a game? Like, we're already at that point after one game. But back to awards, but staying with AD, who was fantastic in game one. Who's fantastic? AD has some interesting things to say. To Dave McMenamin, we talked about MVP finalists and deserving MVP finalists. Anthony Davis is not a Defensive Player of the Year finalist. And he says to Dave McMenamin of ESPN, I'll never get it. They're not giving it to me. The league doesn't like me. I don't think the league votes on this, but okay. I'm the best defensive player in the league. I can switch 1 through 5. I can guard the pick and roll the best in the league from a big standpoint. I block shots. I rebound. I don't know what else to do. I'm over it, which is what people say when they're not over it. I'm over it. I'm just going to do what I got to do to help the team win and try to play for a championship. Accolades and individual awards, I'm done with those. Your thoughts?
I'm on his side.
I am too. I'm shocked because you've been the biggest Anthony Davis hater.
Yep. Yes,
that's another dude we've been at odds over. But I don't know how you can watch Anthony Davis. I don't know how you can watch him cover as much ground as he does. How he can protect the rim and the perimeter damn near at the same time. And everything in between. He can guard anybody. If you watch Anthony Davis, I don't care about stats. I don't care about, who averages more block shots or more rebounds. If you watch Anthony Davis, there is nobody in the league who can do what he does as well as he does.
That's right.
Defensively.
That's right. A versatile, an extremely versatile defender. All that, whatever he just said, everything he said about himself, no lies.
I like watching.
100%.
I like
great
when they're on defense.
Report.
I just watch Anthony Davis. When they're on defense,
great
I watch him go from the rim to the paint to the perimeter. Drop. I watch him drop. I watch him hedge. I watch him do every single. He's incredible. He got a valid.
You know this. You know this, Mike. I love the history of basketball. I love the league. I love its history. I love its players. I love watching the game. Like all this stuff. I eat it up. I love it. You'd have to tell me. I just don't think this has ever happened. Mm-hmm. And I love Wemby too. I don't think in the history of the NBA that a defensive player of the year candidate has come from a 22-win team. Now, I know he's a fantastic talent. And I know he's got a bright future. And in a couple of years, maybe we're having this conversation, Wemby versus Ant-Man, who's the best player?
I don't think you're wrong. But I can't tell you whether you're right or wrong because I can't remember what happened, obviously, 2-3 years ago. But you're probably right about that.
Because
it would stand to reason that your defense wasn't that good if you won 22
games. And look, I'm sure individually, I mean, somebody can get the analytics and be like, when he's matched up primary defender, that guy shoots 38%. I don't know. I can tell you this. This is what I do know. Last year, the San Antonio Spurs won 22 games, 22 years, Red. They won 22 games last year, and they won 22 games this year. I mean, come on. You cannot have him as a defensive player of the year candidate over Anthony Davis. I think that's he's going to be rookie of the year. He should be rookie of the year. But we talk about defense, and your team lost 60 games? What the hell? That's weird. That's a really, really weird finalist selection.
No argument here. I mean, his stats, that might be one of those instances. And even though, you know, at different times I've played a stats guy on television, I wouldn't fancy myself as an analytics guy. I respect analytics. I honestly respect statistics. But this is one of those moments where I think it's going a little too far. I think if you're looking at just his stats, yeah, he's in a defensive player of the year conversation. But from an impact standpoint, how much impact could he have actually made? Like, I mean, look, the rest of his team might just be that shitty to where there's only so much one man can do. Maybe that's an argument. But I think when you're talking about that's like defensive player of the year, the prestige associated with that honor, it's not quite MVP, but it's also not most improved. It's a meaningful award. Like, some of the greatest players in history have that in their trophy case. Like, it matters. Like, it's the award that recognizes that this game is played at both ends. And right. So for an award like this to go to somebody whose defense, no matter how dynamic, did not translate into team success, I don't know how Bill Russell would feel about that.
And I'll even say this.
I think Bill Russell would put something in your collection plate right now, Michael.
Right. And here's the other thing. Just out of the three guys, with all respect, I think Anthony Davis is the best defender of the three finalists. So he's better than all three finalists defensively. I take Anthony Davis over Bam. I take him over Gobert. And I take him over Wemby defensively. So.
Yeah.
Maybe. And Anthony, it's not that the league doesn't like you, it's the voters don't.
Is he the first Laker to play that card? You want to talk about first. Demons are playing the academy from 22-win team. It ain't often that an LA Laker could be like, the league got it out for me. Like, it's usually the opposite.
No, the league loves the Lakers.
The league don't like me. I don't know if the league don't like you. But I think if you know, you know. And if you watch, it's clear as day. Like, he is unique. It was obvious in game one. I'm like, how is this dude playing this many minutes, running back on defense, protecting the paint, and then closing out on a three-pointer? Like, it just he's not Wemby in terms of like this video game, you know, Elliot from Bedazzle creative player, but he damn close in terms of like his ability to cover as much ground as he does. So you got a point. I'm with you, AD.
22-60. I know their defensive rating went down, though. It did go down. No, okay. Really. I'm not even. This time even a joke. I'm not even setting up a joke.
Yeah.
Last year was 120. Last year is 120. This year is 116.
Yeah.
Those numbers, both of those numbers are bad, by the way. So it went from a terrible number to a bad number.
All right. And I mean, I'm right about it. Like the league doesn't pick the finalists; it's based on the voting.
Where the finalists
come from. Yeah. Okay. Right. So the league doesn't like. Who doesn't like Anthony Davis? Outside of New Orleans, who doesn't like Anthony Davis? Everybody likes Anthony Davis.
He really screwed New Orleans. He really screwed. You know what? You know what did?
I'm just glad that you come around on Anthony Davis. We really spent a lot of time over the years with you shitting on Anthony Davis.
I ain't forgot. No,
don't come catching the vapors right now. Don't come catching the vapors on Anthony Davis.
I'm coming around on this particular issue with Anthony Davis. I'm on his side. See, I'm fair. I'm talking about this particular. When he's screaming in the in-season tournament after like scoring over a dude who's 5'9", I'm him in the in-season tournament that they won. I'm like, okay, that's a little much. Okay. I can't
y'all
be on
act like
side,
Anthony Davis out of a championship. Y'all act like Anthony, whoever y'all are, act like you're on a championship. Y'all want to put that asterisk next to his bubble championship. Y'all act like he ain't got a title to his name. I could see if Anthony Davis
had
never won anything. I'm just talking about in general. Yeah. This is me. I'm caping up for people today. Okay. I'm caping up for James Harden. Caping up for all the people that you guys have scorned. All the people that you guys have looked down upon and not given respect to. You know, whether it's Dame Lillard, whether it's James Harden, whether it's Anthony Davis. All these polarizing figures. Anthony Davis got a championship, and it's just like, really? Oh, just. What are we talking about? He is him.
It's messed up how he left. Remember that when he left New Orleans? He had that Porky Pig.
I remember.
Yeah. See, that was pretty. That was foul. Come on, how are you a proud son of New Orleans? Go stand up for that.
Me?
You go stand up for that.
Me?
How you go stand up for that?
You know why? You know why? I am a proud son of New Orleans. A, I don't think he was shitting on New Orleans, the city. I root for the city. B, I grew up in a time when we didn't have a basketball team. The Jazz had moved to Utah and they kept the name, which will forever be problematic. Still 10 years younger than you. The Jazz were gone. And the Hornets/Pelicans hadn't come yet. So I didn't grow up like riding or dying with the Pelicans. I don't think he was like saying, I don't want to be in this city. Who would say that? I think it was like he wanted to win so people like Michael Holley could stop talking about how he wasn't a winner. And then when he won, people like Michael Holley still say he ain't that dude. So that's why you say the league don't like him. That's why you're upset. Because people like you don't give him the credit that he deserves. Yeah, you are. You're establishment. That's all, folks. All right, man. Good stuff. Good start to the week. See you on Wednesday, God willing, and the creek don't rise.
That's right.
It's draft.
We'll be a day away.
Oh my gosh, you know what we should do? Gosh, I'm so excited.
Real quick, I hate to spring this on you.
What should we do? Don't ask me to do more work.
Let's do it. Let's do an extra show Friday. Let's come in on Friday. Talk about the draft.
Why you put me on the spot? Why you couldn't ask me this like off camera? Now I'm gonna look like.
What you doing on Friday? All right, Friday.
We're
gonna do a draft show. All right, gotta go. See ya.
Now I'm gonna look like the slacker. You know, if I don't
better
agree
show
to
up.
It.
See you Friday.
All right, maybe. Let's get to Wednesday first. One day at a time.
Want the same expert advice you get from the pros in the store while shopping online at DiscountTire.com? Meet Treadwell, your personal online tire guide that matches you with the perfect tire for your vehicle. Get your best match in 1 minute or less with Treadwell by Discount Tire.
Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of body plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all 4.5-inch Bonnie plants are on sale through May 5th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money.